What's the 411? You're tuned in to 411 Teen, a weekly program for teens and other interested folks. 411 Teen provides a forum to examine and discuss various issues and events that confront, intersect, and sometimes interrupt our daily lives. This edition of 411 Teen talks with the Common Sense Teen. The Common Sense Teen consists of teens with diverse political affiliations. The Common Sense panel seek to maintain a substantive political dialogue, analyzing and evaluating national, state, and local politics of today. Tap into the pulse of young folks. Joining me here at the roundtable, I welcome Hannah Kiros. Hannah is in the 11th grade at Rickard. She's in the IB program, and she's into computer science and public policy.
Thanks for having me.
I'm glad to have you, and glad that you have recovered from the flu.
Me too.
And Keon Bachmani. Keon also attends Rickard. He's in the IB program, 11th grade, and history is his thing.
I'm glad to be here.
Okay. Quinn Huckabee. I am always glad to have Quinn. He is from Rickards IB. He always has something good to add to the conversation. His thing is world government, dance, and physics.
Thank you for having me.
Welcome to 411 Teen, all of you. Okay. Boy, we have a lot to talk about. Where do we start? Let's start with the Obama legacy. What do you see? Because we haven't really met and talked about anything. We haven't talked since before the inauguration.
Yeah. We had one meeting after.
Yeah, one meeting after the election.
Yeah.
All right, so I know you had wanted to talk about the Obama legacy. I'll start with you, Hannah. What do you see as the legacy?
I mean, I'm personally a pretty big fan of President Obama. I think that universal health care, or I think the Affordable Care Act is a good step towards universal health care. I really admire his environmental policy. But I think it's very hard to discuss the Obama legacy because the fact that it's followed immediately by the Trump presidency is, I don't know, I think it's a smear on the progress that, well, what I believe is progress that's occurred during the Obama presidency.
In what way?
I think that Donald Trump is a man who began his political career by undermining President Obama's American citizenship. And the fact that that's the man that Obama has to hand his presidency to makes me want to spit acid. But I think also Donald Trump just comes from, like, you know, a very, very, very different perspective than President Obama does. And he's all, his, the main pillars of his campaign have been repealing Obamacare, reversing the Obama administration's friendly attitudes toward refugees and towards immigrants. So it's hard. It's really hard to assess the Obama legacy now because we don't know how much of it's going to last.
But we know what it is at this point, right?
Yeah.
Okay. I mean, and that's true. We don't know how much is going to last, but, you know, where is it? Where do you sit on this, Kia? What do you think?
Personally, I think that a lot of good things came out of the Obama administration, but at the same time, if you take a holistic approach, there's also bad things. Just like there's two sides to every coin, you know? I think Obama did really good on working with healthcare and all that kind of stuff. And in America, personally to me, one of the biggest issues I see is that there's a lack of universal healthcare. If you look up North Canada, Canada is – they're a very progressive nation. They have universal healthcare. And they support each other. They support for the fellow citizens. Even countries, Britain, for example, they all have universal health care, and it's a very important thing to have because in times of need, you might need so on and so forth. But at the same time, the Obama foreign policy, in my opinion, he kind of failed there. Because he promised a lot of things. Granted, he did a lot of things as well. But, for example, he wanted to end the war in Afghanistan, but that didn't happen. There's still troops deployed in Afghanistan. And we wanted to create a stable Iraq, too. That also didn't happen. But, I mean, we're still working on that now, and hopefully that will happen in the near future. But I think that Obama was following Bush. What Bush did, in my opinion, was wasn't good.
Man.
But Obama coming after him, Obama saw us through one of the greatest recessions that our country has ever seen. Unemployment is down, right? But at the same time, you know, we have a growing population. We have so many more things we have to take care of. We have a declining state of public health. But Obama did a lot of good too. Don't get me wrong.
Okay. Right. And Quinn.
Well, I also agree that there were good and bad things in Obama's presidency. For me, he kind of stumbled a little on healthcare. I think he pushed it through too fast. And I think he pushed it, what he was trying to do, through Congress, to the point where there were mistakes when it got out into the public. And I think that he didn't really achieve what he wanted to when it came to healthcare. I'm actually of the perspective that some healthcare should be privatized, even though there should be a baseline of universal healthcare. So I would have done healthcare differently. I think that if there had been a moderate president that came after Obama, maybe that would have been a lot better than someone who wants to completely get rid of Obamacare, which is impractical. As for foreign policy, I think that he was probably one of the most aggressive presidents when it came to foreign policy. He did a lot of things that he did before he asked Congress about, which some people think is a good thing and some people think is a bad thing. Personally, for me, I would have been a little calmer when it came to foreign policy. I would have tried to be diplomatic with the nations instead of going to war with them. So for me, his legacy is very convoluted. He definitely helped our economy. There's no denying that. But that's where I stand on his legacy.
I think one of the things that I admire about President Obama, but something that I think can sometimes inhibit him when he's trying to get policy across, is that he's kind of a perennial optimist, and he tried for so long to pass immigration reform and gun control through Congress. And like a large reason why Obama was so popular in 2008 was because he was an outsider, and he's, you know, less of an outsider than the outsider that we have in office now. But he was someone of limited political experience. He'd only served for a couple of years in the Senate and in like state Senate before he became the president. And I think that hindered his ability to work through Congress. And in regards to healthcare, I'm a really big proponent of the public option. I feel like if the public option had been pushed through when Obama had a Democratic Senate, a lot of the problems that exist within the Affordable Care Act now wouldn't exist. But I think times when Obama has wanted to push, he's held himself back. I think part of that is because, like, as the first African-American president, I think he was held to a higher level of scrutiny, and Americans wanted to make sure that he was the president for all Americans, not just Black Americans or not just poor Americans. But I think that a lot of the time, Obama's biggest restriction was himself. And I think that sometimes he achieved so much, and I admire President Obama so much, or a former president now, but I think sometimes he held himself back.
Do you all think he was a transformational president? And by that, I mean transformational presidents do more than just govern, you know? I mean, basically, they challenge and they change the direction of the country. Sure, quick.
Well, I definitely think so. I think him being president made a lot of the minorities and people like that more willing to be open with their concerns and their feelings. And so I think that led to a lot of controversy during his presidency, but it also led to a lot of open conflict, which is good because it results in change. And so I think that a lot more, you know, protests and things like that actually were heard because he was president, and he was a president of a minority. And yet he was also a president who wasn't focusing only on his minority.
Okay. All right. What about you?
I think one of my favorite aspects of Obama's legacy is the cultural impact that he's had and the way that he's changed the way that we view presidents. Because I think especially coming from George Bush, he's a little bit of a shock because I think he's like a cool guy in office who knows how to play basketball and likes Kendrick Lamar and jazz. And like I think he also – he one thing that I really do admire about President Obama is his love of – like reading and his love of music, and he does something where he releases a summer playlist on Spotify and he releases his book list, and I think it's very hard to argue against the cultural legacy that the Obamas have left in the White House, because I think they've done a lot for American culture in general, and I think they've also had a pretty scandal-free presidency, which is something that I commend.
Mm-hmm. What do you sit on this, King?
I'm gonna agree with Hannah on this, but I'm gonna with the cultural effects of the Obama administration and all that, but I'm gonna have to say that no, it was not a transformative presidency. I think this is because even though the Obama administration progressed leaps and bounds in some areas, at the same time it fell behind in others. So, if you look at the state of the nation 8 years ago, yes, it's better now.
Right.
But at the same time, by how much, you know? So I think that if you – Obama, he was a president that passed a lot of executive
orders,
right? Sorry, forgot the word. Orders and all that kind of stuff. But a lot of the time, Congress would be deadlocked with him and all that kind of stuff. And now executive orders can be easily repealed. Obama's policies, now you're seeing Obamacare maybe going to be repealed under the Trump administration. So in some areas, in some places, some regards, it can be presented as a stagnancy.
Okay. I'm going to ask you all to hold your thoughts because we're going to take a break in a minute. But before we go on break, I want to present this to you and have you think about it, and I'll get to both of you because I know you had some comments you wanted to make. Do you think, in your opinion, did Trump win or did Hillary lose? That's something I want you to think about. You're tuned into 411 Teen. We're going to take a quick break, but we'll return shortly. If you're just tuning in, the program is 411 Teen, and we are talking about today's political climate. Quinn, I know you had some comments you wanted to make before we went on break, and then Hannah, you too. And then we'll get into who won and who lost. Okay.
I just wanted to say about Obama, because this is actually something I really admire about what he did, is maybe it won't be recognized in history, but I think the last 6 months or so of his presidency where he kind of calmed everyone down about Trump, even after Trump had won, he tried to unify the nation. I think that was one of the greatest things he did in his presidency. I think if he hadn't done that, it might be even more tumultuous now than it is. And already it's like the biggest political upheaval in history. So I think that what he did to unify the nation at the end of his presidency with the election of Trump was really important.
Okay.
Yeah, I agree. And I think just like lame duck Obama was pretty awesome. I think, I think Obama's been his like largest roadblock in a lot of senses during his presidency. And I think during the lame duck period, presidents tend to wake up and say, hey, I'm the president, I'm the leader of the free world, maybe I should start doing what I want. And I think that's especially, you know, a lot of that progress is tenuous now, but his ban on offshore drilling is something that I really commend in his last, couple weeks in office. But I also think that to be a truly transformative president, you kind of have to have a president after you that's willing to uphold the transformations that you've made. And So I think that President Obama himself was a transformative president, but I don't know if the political changes that he's enacted are going to transform. But that being said, I do think that the Affordable Care Act has set a new precedent for what we expect from our healthcare providers, because even when Republicans discuss repealing Obamacare, they still try to hold on to the fact that people with pre-existing conditions can get coverage and that you can stay on your parents' plans until you're 26. So I think in that aspect, he's been transformative in what we expect from our healthcare.
Okay. Keon, do you think Obama. Do you think Hillary lost or did Trump win? Or a little bit of both.
I think that Trump won as opposed to Hillary losing. Well, maybe both, honestly.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
But I think that the Trump campaign, it was a populist movement. Trump is a populist candidate. A lot of the white people in the country, the white class, they work with Trump. They're for Trump. It's for a reason, because during the Obama administration, the focus was put on, you know, inner cities, working with minorities, and now you see the whites neglected. I mean, not a whole lot. I mean, it's not like they have a bad quality of life or anything. But at the same time, I think this is a cyclic thing. Mm-hmm. This kind of stuff happens all the time. But I think that the Trump winning and Hillary losing, Hillary lost not because of her policies or because of her political outlook, but Trump won because of his populism. The people can understand him. So here comes a man. He was born to wealth, sure, but at the same time, he made himself even richer. So what can he do for the country then?
Okay. Yeah, Quinn.
Well, I was actually pretty excited to answer this question because I was fairly upset at Hillary because I think that she lost it. I think that it was hers to win, and I think that she really just took her campaign not seriously enough.
Well, what about the outside influences like Comey, you know, at the last minute? I mean, what impact did they have on it?
Those did have some effect. The whole FBI, CIA scandals and things just kind of reinforced the idea that, oh, Clinton is a member of, you know, she's a puppet.
Right.
And
right.
Trump is from the outside. He's an independent man. But I think that what it really came down to was Clinton didn't go to reinforce her base that she thought she already had. Like the Reagan Democrats, those that are in Michigan and Wisconsin and Pennsylvania, which turned out to be really important states,
she didn't
go there. And Trump went there, even though it wasn't recommended for him to go there because they were Democratic states. He still went there.
He went there. That's true.
He put himself out there, and Clinton just kind of sat back and said, it's Trump, I'm going to win.
She took him for granted. That's what happened.
That's right.
I think it's kind of silly to discuss Hillary losing and Trump winning as if they're mutually exclusive because, like, they both happened. They're both very true. But I don't know. I think Hillary Clinton wanted to be president so badly, and I think that she ran her campaign pretty badly. But she definitely – I think Hillary Clinton is a conventional candidate, and I think that – after 8 years of, you know, any administration, a change election is going to occur, and she wasn't running a change campaign. And I think that's what hindered her. So I guess in that sense, you know, that's her fault. But I think in response to President Obama, a lot of there were a lot of people in this nation who were threatened by the idea of a black president, who were threatened by cultural changes, by automation, by the loss of the manufacturing industry, that were genuinely scared. And I think that Donald Trump tapped into that. And that's valid. And I mean, you know, he definitely won. He's definitely our president. So go him. But yeah, he won it.
Well, you know, did you have a comment? Anything else? Okay. Trump continues to make allegations about voter fraud. I mean, what is this all about? I mean, no, he did not win the popular vote, okay? But he won, accepted. I mean, there's no problem there. But why do we see, in your opinion, why do we continue to see this? I mean, could 3 million people have voter be under voter fraud? because Hillary had over 3 million votes, more than he did. I mean, what is going on, in your opinion? Why are we seeing this? What do you think, Kian?
It seems like he's
focusing on things to me that really are insignificant. Who, whether he had the most people at the inauguration, if he had more people than were at the women's, you know, what difference does it make?
I think it's a legitimacy kind of thing.
Yeah.
Okay. But he's an egotistic kind of guy.
He's a narcissist.
Yeah. So, I mean, it's the kind of stuff you'd expect.
But what do you expect? I mean, he's in now.
Yeah.
Okay? Yeah. Why are we still focusing on this?
Not sure, honestly.
I mean, yeah, 3 months later, we're still talking about this. You're the president.
I think he's just a reactive guy. So if he hears someone.
Yeah, a lot of stuff came up about the Russia influencing the elections and that kind of stuff. I'm not sure how true that is. But I don't know enough to say. But I think a lot of the stuff he says is in response to that. But
I think he doesn't only want to win.
He wants to super win
yeah. and just crush up. Like, I think he can't handle anything that could possibly undermine the legitimacy of his presidency because there are already people that are unhappy about him being president and they'll seize upon that. But at the same time, you're the president. You know, enjoy it. Bask in it.
Right.
I think it's silly. Like, you're in the power to affect change, so I don't get why he's still questioning it.
I don't know. I mean, I think it was already unlikely enough that he was going to win, and he did, and so I feel like he should be happy about it. But at the same time, I think he kind of sees the country and how crazy it is right now. You know, there's both sides are kind of flaring up against each other.
Mm-hmm.
And maybe it's a unification thing. Maybe he doesn't feel like he can do what he wants to do unless the people below him are unified, and he wants to make it that he actually won instead of that less people voted for him, but he still won because of the Electoral College.
Do you feel that Trump is normalizing deceit? Because he throws stuff out there that just is not true, okay? I mean, do you think he's normalizing deceit?
I'm not sure if he's normalizing it, but I think that at a certain point, the amount of things that the media has to fact check gets very overwhelming. So I'm not sure if deceit is normalized, but I think it's getting harder to catch because of the amount of it that's occurring. I know sometimes, when I've been eating or when I've been working, I've watched the White House press conferences. And what's the man? Is it Steve?
Oh, Sessions?
No.
Jeff Sessions.
It's the speaker. I know who you're talking about.
Yeah, I'm so sorry for forgetting the name.
I am too.
It's slipping my mind. But I think especially when Kellyanne Conway came up with the phrase alternative facts.
Yeah,
so funny.
Mm-hmm.
I wish I could use alternative facts in my life.
Right. We're going to get into that. Well, just what are alternative facts?
I think it's just the Trump administration is moving so fast that it's hard to fact check. And even if there's deceit I think there's certainly more deceit that's coming through than what we've seen with other presidents, and especially just more blatant deceit.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know if that's in the name of efficiency, but I think they're moving at such a fast pace that it's hard to fact check.
Okay. Where do you all sit on this?
I mean, I think that he's an opportunist because the whole fake news concept, really no one had capitalized on it in the way that he did.
Mm-hmm.
He kind of used fake news to convince a ton of people about a lot of things. And he's actually being more truthful than I thought he was going to be because he's actually doing the things he said he was going to do in his campaign.
Yeah.
I never expected that. I thought he was going to scrap all of that and completely do something no one knew. But he's actually doing the things he said he was going to do. So he is, to an extent, making deceit more obvious, I guess, and in your face, kind of so in your face that you can't react to it. But I don't know if he's normalizing it. He's kind of flamboyantizing it.
What do you think?
I definitely agree with Quinn on the point that he's doing a lot of stuff that we wouldn't have expected. For example, case in point, the wall.
Yeah, right.
So here he is talking to Mexico about getting them to pay for the wall, and the president says no, naturally. But secondly, I just wanted to get an example of what the like fake newsers.
Well, it's basically where a bunch of people like write an article that supports something that someone said that isn't true, and then they kind of circulate it by Facebook or something like that, and then a bunch of people share it.
Start believing it.
Yeah, and they just read the title and send it. Then it spreads.
I know someone at my school showed me an article yesterday that said, in Obama's last day in office, he pays millions of dollars to the Palestinians who support suicide bombers and reward them in cash payments. And I Googled the story, and the only website that that was cut that had that headline was, I think, Conservative Daily. So I think what's happening is that niche websites and news services are developing that only feed people the news that they want to receive. And those websites aren't really dedicated to being authentic and to, you know, producing quality journalism, and then people end up being misinformed.
Well, that's the thing that kind of happens all the time. I mean, you see that even on, like, TV, and, you know, every year. There's probably been, like, even in newspapers way back when. There's different editorials, journals for conservatives, for liberals, for anyone in between.
It's a different take on it.
Right. And when you read only stuff that caters to you, which the only stuff out there really is bias. It's hard to find unbiased news sources. But if you don't read both, if you're only reading your type, then of course you're gonna have that mindset. So unless you broaden your views or horizons, you're not really gonna get what's available to you.
How important is transparency?
Oh, it's really important. I think there's some things that you can't like share because of national secrecy and security, like national safety and things like that. But the doings of a president. Like that, I mean, that's one thing that's nice about Trump is that he can't really hide anything very well because he can't bear to hide it. He wants people to know that he's doing it. But it is really important that you know what's going on in your country. That's kind of what this country's founded on, is that you always know what's going on in your government that is directly relevant to you.
You all agree where you sit?
I think the more transparent you are, the more power people have to hold power accountable.
Are we too transparent then? Because that's also been a complaint that, you know, Americans tell everything. They say everything. They put it out there. That's why other countries, everybody's smiling. They can't see. But, I mean, that's the flip side. Are we too transparent?
I think that's a good thing. I think that promotes a liberal society. I think that the free flow of information is, like, a really good
thing.
But
then we let other countries know who are, you know, what we're doing.
Right. And we also make countries think that the citizens are really mad at their government when in reality they're saying what they think and it can be said.
I think in some places America is transparent, but in others it isn't. For example, the military, it's really blatant with what it does. And as opposed to other countries, for example, Russia, they don't entirely disclose everything they have to the public and all that kind of stuff. Also, here in America, there's a lot of stuff that happens under the table and clandestine. But
because we need to – I'm glad you – excuse me for interrupting, but I'm glad you brought that up because Americans have this attitude that, oh, we don't do anything. And we do plenty of things. We tap in on calls. We we set up people. Right. We kill presidents or have them killed.
Oh, my God.
You know, I don't know about that one. You know, we do. Yeah, okay? I mean, that's just the reality of it, okay? But we, you know, we present as, oh, we don't engage in any of that.
I definitely agree on that one. And it is a problem, and it can lead to a lack of public trust. Once things surface, for example, the Panama Papers, those came out a while ago. The NSA, their scandals surfacing, all that kind of stuff. It was a shock to the American public. It was a shock to the world. So, yeah, I think definitely the American government should be more transparent with its population or not engage in those acts at all.
Well, I think that it shouldn't really be one of those things that that people say like, oh, America isn't as transparent as you think they are, you know, because every government is going to engage in those kind of actions. And, I mean, sometimes certain things happen where it would take too long to tell people what you're doing, and then it would also mean that the person that you're doing it against would know
beforehand. That's exactly the point I was trying to make.
But so I think that you should be transparent about a lot of things, but there are some things like regarding the safety of people and the safety of societies where you just can't be transparent like that.
Yep.
Right. Do you think we need to go back to torture? Trump says torture is acceptable and it's a useful tool.
No. That's a strong no for me.
That's a strong no for me too.
Really?
Yeah.
Kansas, yes, well, all right.
I don't want to be the outlier here.
No, but that's all right.
No, but I think that some things are definitely unethical, mm-hmm. and that but I mean it's torture. What are you gonna do? I think as a matter of national, I mean, a lot of the time it's being used like willy-nilly, you know, oh, we got a guy, let's torture him. But you need hard evidence first before you torture anyone. And at the same time, you should realize that everyone has certain human rights. So no mutilating certain,
okay.
You know.
All right. Hold your thoughts for a moment. You're tuned in to 411 Teen. We're going to take a break, but we'll return momentarily. What's the 411? You're tuned into 411 Teen, and I would like to ask my panel from your perspective. Now, we've talked about a number of issues. What are the major issues that command attention at this point, and why? Why do you think they command attention?
I think that environmental degradation is probably like number one on my list because I think currently the American economy is doing pretty well and unemployment's at like 4.7%, which I know is, I mean, I think it could do to be slightly lower, but that's really, really good considering where we were 8 years ago and also just considering the natural unemployment rate that's inherent in the United States. But I think that following the signing of the Paris Climate Agreement, America's, you know, I think the arc of America is leaning towards justice, which makes me really happy. I think that we're heading the right way when it comes to our environmental policy. But I think we're at a pretty critical juncture where we have to decide whether we're going to actually follow through with the Paris Agreement and if we're going to dedicate ourselves to environmental issues, because eventually time's going to run out. So that's a pretty important issue to me.
Okay. Kinga.
I definitely agree. The environment is a big issue for me, too. And the Trump administration, correct me if I'm wrong, but I'm pretty sure the man Trump appointed to the head of the EPA, he denies climate change.
Yep.
Yeah.
And most of the Republican administration cabinet denies climate change. That's a big issue when you hear you have the people in power denying climate change. It's
like our state
kind of thing.
It's no different than what we had going on here in the state of Florida.
Right. I mean, it's an issue. You can't make progress. It doesn't matter how many protocols you sign, but you can't make progress unless the people in power want to make progress, you know, unless they change their environmental policy.
Okay.
Environment for me again. I'm not one of those conservatives that don't believe in climate change. It's very real. And I also think that immigration is a big deal and it's a hard deal because there are legitimate arguments to both sides. And I think that healthcare is very important because the healthcare situation is kind of twisted right now, and it looks like it's going to be even more twisted, and it might actually be taken away, which would cause a void in the economy. So I think that those are the three issues for me that are most important right now.
Okay. Yes, ma'am.
Oh, I know that my mother used to have Obamacare, but she's switched to an alternative form of healthcare, considering the fact that Obamacare is pretty tenuous right now. But today's actually, we're filming this on a Tuesday. Sorry to break the, the suspension of disbelief, but we're filming this on January 31st, and this is the last day for Obamacare open enrollment. And the Trump administration has pulled funding for advertisements in the days that are leading up to today.
Right.
And especially considering the fact that you're trying to encourage, you know, millennials and healthier people to register, and those are the people that are prone to registering at the, like, the last second.
Right.
Doing that, I think, is kind of malicious. So I think, like, after following, you know, the passage of the Affordable Care Act, we have 20 million people that were, you know, insured. And I think that we've definitely made strides towards healthcare, but I think healthcare is certainly about to become an issue.
Right.
And because the Trump administration wants to move so fast in repealing Obamacare, and I don't think.
Yeah, but they've slowed down
yeah.
a lot because
I think the public's
think
been holding them to the fire on that.
Well, I think they also are finding that it's not that easy. I don't believe that they are really eager to put 20 million people without any type of care. I just don't think that.
It's
I don't
impossible.
Know.
I don't think it's going to happen.
You think it's going to happen?
I don't think it's going
oh,
to happen,
okay.
but I think the transition is going to be hasty to whatever the new plan is. I think that there are legitimate problems within Obamacare, so
oh,
I,
sure.
If the Republicans can come up with a plan that is better, that lowers healthcare premiums for the majority of Americans, then you know I'm all for it, but I'm kind of doubtful if that's going to happen anytime soon. So I think discouraging Americans from enrolling in the current healthcare system that is in place is just mean-spirited. And
well, what's new? I mean, that's what's been going on anyway.
Yeah.
I mean, that's nothing new is what I'm just saying. You're right. But I think a lot has been mean-spirited.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I mean, the whole campaign and is mean-spirited. Trump has banned 7 Muslim countries. What is it, Iraq? Iran, Libya, Sudan, Syria. I mean, he has. What is that? You talk about mean spirited. What is that?
I know.
I mean, how do you all feel about this? Yet he also said, you know, well, the Syrian Christians. He said he will try to give them aid. Okay, what is that? What does that mean?
I know my mom called me because she said, oh, Hannah, they've added Ethiopia to the ban, which is not true. Listen, after I made that statement, that didn't happen. But she heard them discussing Ethiopia on CNN, and she assumed that's what, you know, they were referring to.
Mm-hmm.
And when I heard her say that, I suddenly felt so angry because I realized, like, oh, my grandmother is in the United States for a medical treatment. If she goes home, will she ever be able to come back? And I suddenly, like, realized that my family's ability to visit me would be tenuous.
Mm-hmm.
And then, you know, when I realized that Ethiopia wasn't included in the ban, it helped me realize that, oh, this is how every single member of those 7 nations is probably
That's right.
feeling. And, like, I think it's so excessive, especially banning visa holders, green card holders. It's not just a ban on refugees coming into
right.
the United States. It's a ban on travel, which...
Right.
I think it's excessive.
What about those who are here legitimately that go home to see their families here in school? I mean, graduate students, all of they go home and they can't get back to go to school.
Right.
I mean, it's...
In the first couple days of the ban, I'm pretty sure things like visa holders and green card holders, they couldn't come in.
Right.
But this is a big issue for me, too, because I'm from Iran.
Mm-hmm.
I think.
What was your reaction when you heard that?
I was in the car when my dad told me. But I mean, I was kind of taken aback. I was like, "Oh wow!" But I mean, kind of expected it, I guess. But yeah.
Did you?
I mean,
okay.
The same thing happened under the Obama administration. Iranians
mm-hmm.
got banned from the. I can't remember the exact circumstances, but I know that Iranians got banned from the country for I can't remember how long either. But I know what happened under the Obama administration. It is completely legal to do this.
Oh yeah.
But the issue here is that a lot of these people from these countries, sure, like some people, the reason they've been banned is because these countries are home to terrorist activity, as told by the U.S. But that's all a matter of perspective, I guess, and that's definitely something that should be taken into account. I mean, I understand why the U.S. would think why the U.S. government would think that these people are home, they have big terrorist loyalty. They fund terrorists, for example, Hezbollah, which is funded by Iran. In my view, that is not a terrorist group, but to the American government, that is a terrorist group, and that's their decision to make. It's not mine. I'm just in high school, but so Iran. And they're supporting the Houthis and all that stuff, and Saudi Arabia, which is the American ally in the region, they're working against them. So Iran is labeled a terrorist group, and for working with this Assad government, and the Assad government itself, proponents of that being banned from the country, the Libyans being banned from the country, and all that kind of stuff. I think the American government, if it finds that this is something that they should do, it is justifiable. But at the same time, there's people out there that need serious help, that are refugees. They don't have a lot of places to go, that need to come to this country. And whether that be temporarily, which would honestly, in my opinion, be preferable, because these countries have to be rebuilt somehow. They need a population to rebuild it. So it'd be more beneficial to have them here for a little bit and then go back rather than permanent citizens. I mean, it's their choice. It's not mine to make. But at the same time, the Christian thing, the Trump administration being partial to the Christians, that right there was a big overstepping of the boundaries for me. It's not a religious thing for me. It's just that
Well, that's what he said, but when he puts that Christian becomes a religious thing.
Right. So I think it is a religious thing for the Trump administration because, you know, the Republicans pride themselves in being Christian. I mean, but yes, the Christians are suffering. I'm not saying the Christians are not suffering. They definitely are. But the only people who protect them in Syria is the Assad government and the Kurds and the other ethnic minorities they work with. The Syrian the Syrian FSA and the ISIS, they kill Christians when they get their hands on them most of the time. But at the same time, Sunni Muslims and Shia Muslims and Kurds and all that, they get killed in Syria too. A lot of them get killed. But there is a higher displacement rate among Christians and all that, I understand. But it's not like the Christians don't have anywhere to go in Syria. The Assad government provides for them, but I think that accepting Christians and as a result of, and side by side not accepting any Muslims is just something you can't do. That's cherry picking, you know?
Right.
So, yeah, you can go.
Okay.
You sure?
Yeah.
Huh. Okay.
Go ahead.
Well, I agree that I don't agree with what was done, and I'm really just taking out of account the refugees because that's a whole other issue. Just look at what it looks like to the people that are in those countries, because the terrorist groups are going to take advantage of whatever they can. They're going to say, America just put a blanket ban on all of you. They are racist, you know. Well, they're going to say whatever they can about you, and it's going to help them because there are going to be a lot of people that look at that and say, America isn't what they say they are.
See? Yeah.
And that's not to say that you shouldn't put bans on certain things, but they shouldn't be blanket bans. They shouldn't just be a ban on the country.
Right.
There should be, you know, exceptions. There should be caveats for people who aren't dangerous and things like that. And also for academics. Because the academics that are in universities that are doing research that, I mean, America prides itself on having academics from a wide range of countries. That's how they get so advanced in academics, is because they have research from all over the world come to America. But there are probably a lot of academics, I'm assuming, that are going to be afraid of this because they may not be able to come right. back once they leave.
Indeed. Yes, Hannah.
Oh, I agree with everything both of you said, but just like a quick fact check. The Obama administration, in response to two Iraqis coming, being able to come and settle in Kentucky with terrorist background, but they didn't recognize that they had a terrorist background,
right.
and they realized it after they came into the U.S.
Mm-hmm.
President Obama authorized a revision of the Iraqi immigration and refugee program, and the number went from, I think, 18,000 to 6,000 the next year, but went back up to 12,000 the next year. So there's no precedent
right.
for this, especially, I think, Trump acting as if he's continuing the Obama legacy. First, that's strange because you've rallied against the Obama legacy with like every fiber in your body. So using him to justify yourself isn't going to get you
right.
anywhere with anyone. But that's just a falsehood. That's a lie. Like, I don't know. Because the Obama administration never imposed any sort of ban on immigrants from any nation. And I think this really promotes the narrative that, you know, America is actually Islamophobic, and I think that it does encourage
mm-hmm.
homegrown terrorism.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it's just also very misguided that the refugees from the seven nations that have been mentioned have not killed an American in any terrorist
right.
act ever.
Mm-hmm.
But we know that Saudi Arabia is, you know, where most of the orchestrators of 9/11 came from. We know that, like, there's a larger terrorist threat in Pakistan. And
mm-hmm.
I think what distinguishes those nations from the seven nations that were mentioned is that the American government has business dealings there, and Donald Trump himself has
business
dealings there. There's, by not taking in any Syrian refugees, you're acting as if the Syrian refugee crisis is not ongoing. You're acting as if thousands of people aren't fleeing from Aleppo. And it's just, I feel like you're dehumanizing people and you're delegitimizing
mm-hmm.
their suffering, and it makes me so sad. And I think, like, I love America so much, and I feel like this discredits America's, you know, reputation abroad. I feel like now, like, I love being an American, but I feel like it's, like, you know, a stain on our record. It's a stain on the American dream, American
mm-hmm.
promise, and it really frustrates me.
Mm-hmm. Well, we're down to 3 minutes, but we've got to talk about the Women's March.
Okay.
Because it was, as Trump would say, a huge
mm-hmm.
success nationwide, and even it spread to other continents. The numbers were astounding. Trump states that the numbers were distorted and that his inauguration had even more in attendance.
Mm-hmm.
What's your take on this?
Oh, I know my sister went to the Women's March in New York, and she got a photo with Whoopi Goldberg. She was really excited. And, I think it's cool. I think you have to hold power accountable in some way, and I think that, you know, if there's a silver lining of the Trump presidency, it's that a lot of Americans are becoming more politically active, and when they see something they don't like, they exercise their right to protest, and I think that's good. I'm very, very happy that all the protests that have been occurring have remained peaceful. They haven't delegitimized
yes,
their cause
they were.
In any
that's
way.
A very important part.
I think it's important, but yeah, Quinn.
Yeah, Quinn.
I do wish they had clear goals, because I felt like they were just kind of marching. And I understand, mm-hmm. like, they're marching against everything that Trump has ever said. But if they had had more clearly defined goals, I feel like they might have been able to do more. I don't know. I don't know that much about it. I just know that it happened. And I do wish that I had known more about it. And I feel like they could have done a lot with that march that they missed.
Well, yeah. Go on.
I've been studying the march on Washington for Model UN. And I think it's just to show that we're planning on holding power accountable and that we don't view this as being acceptable. And I think there's a lot of value in that. I know a lot of people are marching for Planned Parenthood. They're marching for their own specific causes. And I think to signify one cause would have limited participation.
Right.
And I think it would have there would have been conflict in, you know, prescribing a specific message. So I think by making it a more inclusive march, it furthered their cause.
Oh, okay.
What message did it send?
We don't like you. We don't want you. Be good.
Nothing you do is going to be easy.
Right. I agree with Quinn that there is people that oppose you, that there is discontent within the American population, and that Trump now more so than ever before really has to prove himself that mm-hmm. he can be a good president. And that's just what we're waiting on to find out.
Well, as usual, we are out of time, but I always want to extend my sincere appreciation for your participation. To my listening audience, thanks for the privilege of your time. That's it for this edition of 411 Teen. Tune in next week, same time, same place, to get the 411 on 411 Teen. This edition of 411 Teen was produced by Dr. Liz Hollifield. Technical assistant, Ken Smith. Audio copies are available. And if you want to participate in 411 Teen or have suggestions for discussion topics, call 1-800-829-8809, extension 358. If you would like to subscribe to 411 Teen podcast, log in wfsu.org. Check us out on Facebook.